Last time we had gotten through the first chapter of Deuteronomy, and just as we begin the second chapter of Deuteronomy, we have a period of about 38 years in which the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness as they fulfilled this curse that God placed upon them, that all of the adults over the age of 20 would die in that wilderness before they were allowed to go into the land of Canaan, with the exception of Caleb and Joshua. There is not very much said in the Bible about this 38-year period that the children of Israel spent wandering in the wilderness. The most notable thing that they left as a result of that was the fact that their carcasses were strewn in that wilderness, and a whole generation of people were relegated to living in the wilderness for the rest of their natural lives rather than being allowed to go into the promised land of Canaan because of the disobedience at Kadesh Barnea. However, we do have a few things that are mentioned, events that did happen in the wilderness, besides the fact that they continued with the worship of the tabernacle and the duties of the priests, and various and sundry laws were reiterated to the people during that time. Last time we discussed the fact of the man who picked up sticks on the Sabbath and how that this was considered to be a presumptuous sin rather than a sin of ignorance, and he was stoned to death as a result of that. Now this was while they were in the wilderness, that 38 and a half years or so while they waited for this time to pass. Then we have another event that happened that we want to talk about tonight, and that's the rebellion of Korah and his associates against Moses and Aaron. Now this is found in the 16th chapter of Numbers, so tonight we'd like to devote most of our time to the study of that event, the rebellion of Korah. And we'll just begin in the first verse of Numbers chapter 16 and read through that chapter and discuss the teaching about this situation as the Bible gives it. Numbers 16, beginning with the first verse. Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. Now, this first verse is simply naming four people. Korah, who was the son of Levi, which means he was of the tribe of Levi, and three others, Dathan, Abiram, and On, who were of the tribe of Reuben. Now, these men, and this is the only mention we have of On, so apparently he dropped out of the conspiracy rather early. These men were opposed to the fact that Moses and Aaron had the places of leadership. Aaron was in the priesthood, and so they were opposed to that, and so they rebelled against it. And apparently they wanted to start a priesthood of their own, or start another order, another movement that would have equal power or superior power to what Moses and Aaron had. They took men. We find out that they took, there were 250 princes that followed them. And they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown. So that wasn't just some of the stragglers and some of the lesser people who followed them, but it was 250 of the princes, that men of renown, the higher-up officials of the tribes were among those who were following them. And they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron and said unto them, ye take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation are holy, every one of them, as the Lord is among them. Wherefore then lift ye up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord. So there's a lot you can read into this charge here. But what they're really saying is, you're lifting yourselves up above everybody else, Moses and Aaron. You take too much on you. You're taking too much authority, too much responsibility. You're putting yourself into too high of a position, because the Lord is the Lord of all of us, and we're all equal people, and you don't have any right to do what you're doing. Now, in some situations, this might be a very valid and true argument, but in the case of Moses and Aaron and the children of Israel, this argument was absolutely contrary to God's will. God had placed Moses in the position he was in. He was the mediator. He was the leader. He's the one who did take him out of the land of Egypt. And Aaron also was placed in this high position way before they really got out of Egypt, being the brother of Moses. But we see now what happens among people many, many times, where one group begins to feel jealous or envious or resentful towards another group. They begin to think, well, they're doing this and they're doing that. And so this resentment builds and builds, so finally you have a conflict, you have a rebellion, and actually a showdown. And when Moses heard it, he fell upon his face. And he spake unto Korah and unto all his company, saying, even tomorrow the Lord will show who are his and who is holy, and will cause him to come near unto him. Even him whom he hath chosen will he cause to come near unto him. So there, Moses says, tomorrow we're going to have a test, and the Lord's going to show who he's chosen and who he hasn't chosen. This do. Now here's a little thing that they were going to do to make the test. This do. Take you censers, Korah, and all his company, and put fire therein, and put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow. And it shall be that the man whom the Lord doth choose, he shall be holy. Ye take too much upon you, ye sons of Levi. Now they were to take the censers, put fire in it, put incense in it, and then the Lord would show who he had chosen. And then Moses turned it right back around. He said, you take too much upon you, ye sons of Levi. And Moses said unto Korah, hear, I pray you, ye sons of Levi, seemeth it but a small thing unto you that the God of Israel hath separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself to do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them? Now you see, Korah was also a member of the tribe of Levi, but in the tribe of Levi, only those who were of the household of Aaron were actually going to be the priests. And particularly the high priests. And so the other Levites, although they were not priests, they had been separated also for the service of the Lord. They were to take care of the affairs of the tabernacle and to stand before the congregation to minister to them. There were many duties that they did perform, although they were not the actual priest or high priest. And so Moses says, is it a small thing to you that God has done this? He separated you from the rest of the congregation to work in the tabernacle and to minister to the congregation? Or you think that God hasn't given you a very high duty? You think God has given you some lowly thing that's beneath your dignity to do, and you don't want to do what has been assigned you and what is within your realm of capability? This is the argument that Moses makes back. And so as we see this situation, we can each one see maybe our own selves to some extent. We may tend to get envious of somebody else with the thing they do or the authority that they have or the position they have of responsibility. But maybe they have this position of responsibility because of the work they've done that's put them in a position where they're able to take on the responsibility. And then we may tend to forget about the responsibility that we have. Although it's different, may not be the same, but it is a responsible position. Each one of us have duties that are ours to do. And we should not think that the duties that are ours are but a small thing, because each one has a duty that is a part of the whole picture, and it is definitely important. And Moses goes on and says, and he hath brought thee near to him, and all thy brethren, the sons of Levi, with thee, and seek ye the priesthood also? You're wanting to be a priest also in addition to the fact that you're the tribe of Levi. Now, the Levites were considered to be a rather special tribe in that they didn't have a territory, but they were to be about the duties of the tabernacle and later the temple. And so they were really considered to be sort of the ministers of the congregation. And then that one group of them, of the family of Levi, family of Aaron, they were the priests. But he said, you want the priesthood also. For which cause both thou and all thy company are gathered together against the Lord. This is why you've come together against the Lord, because you want the priesthood in addition to what you already have. And what is Aaron that you murmur against him? What did Aaron do wrong? Why are you so upset with Aaron? He's only doing what God has set about for him to do. So that was Moses' contact now with Korah. Verse 12, and Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, which says, we will not come up. He wanted to talk to them, but they wouldn't come to Moses and talk. They refused to come to Moses and talk, but here was their answer. Now, they had a pretty sharp reply for Moses. You can tell they thought this through quite a bit. Is it a small thing that thou hast brought us up out of the land that floweth with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, except thou make thyself altogether a prince over us? Now, what they're saying to Moses is, do you think it's such a light thing that you took us out of this good land of Egypt, the land that flowed with milk and honey, and brought us out here in this wilderness to kill us, except that you're going to make yourself a prince over us? Is that the only thing that's great about this? And you can see what kind of an argument they would have. Well, our very lives are at stake. We have committed our whole entire destiny to being stuck here in this desert. You brought us out here. You took us out of a good land. And now all we're going to get out of it is you're going to be a prince over us. Moreover, thou hast not brought us into a land that flowed with milk and honey, or given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Wilt thou put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. In addition to bringing us out of a good land, you haven't brought us into the place that we were promised. Well, we all know why they weren't brought to that place. It's because they'd refused to go in. The only two that agreed to go, besides Moses and Aaron, were actually Caleb and Joshua. They'd refused to go when they had the opportunity, but now they blame Moses. You didn't bring us to that good land of milk and honey and where we can inherit the vineyards and the fields. And then he said, wilt thou put out the eyes of these men? And I suppose that means, are you going to blind these people and make them think that this is good, what you've done to them? We will not come up. So they refused to go and discuss the matter with Moses. Wouldn't hear what Moses had to say. And Moses was very wroth and said unto the Lord, respect not thou their offering. I have not taken one ass from them, neither have I hurt one of them. Now it seems that what was going to happen on the next day, Moses was going to cause all of these people to make an offering to the Lord like a priest would make. They wanted to be priests? Okay. You make an offering like a priest would make. And then we'll see which one the Lord is pleased with. And the Lord tells Moses, pleased with God here before they do it. He says, respect not their offering. I haven't done anything bad to them at all. I haven't taken anything from them. Neither have I hurt them. And Moses said unto Korah, be thou and all thy company before the Lord, thou and they and Aaron tomorrow. He tells Korah, you get all the company before the Lord tomorrow. We're going to have the showdown now to see just exactly who the Lord does choose in this matter. And so he explains how to do it in verse 17. And take every man his censer, and put incense in them, and bring ye before the Lord every man his censer, 250 censers, thou also and Aaron, each of you his censer. Now we'd like to take this verse and do some deeper study on some of the things that are mentioned here. He talks about taking a censer, and he talks about taking incense. Now this censer and incense were tools or pieces of equipment that were used in the worship of God. First of all, let's look at a censer and see just what we're talking about. In Leviticus, the 16th chapter, beginning with about the 11th verse, we have an account of how Aaron was to use a censer. Now, what is a censer? A censer is just simply a little metal container that's designed to put coals in, or fire, and then you could carry this fire around from one place to another in it, but on top of those coals, and you would sprinkle incense, and it would ignite the incense and cause the smoke and the smell of it to go up and be spread around. That's what the censer was. And you can see how it would be a convenient thing to use for that purpose. Well, Aaron, the high priest, who went in once a year to make atonement for the people, in Leviticus 16, it describes his use of this censer. Before he went in and made an offering for the people, he had to first of all make an offering of a bullock for himself and his family. He had to get rid of his own sins first, then he could make the offering for the people. So Leviticus 16, beginning with verse 11, "And Aaron shall bring the bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself, and shall make an atonement for himself and for his house, and shall kill the bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself. And he shall take a censer full of burning coals of fire from off the altar before the Lord, and his hands full of sweet incense, beaten small, and bring it within the veil. And he shall put the incense upon the fire before the Lord, that the clouds of the incense may cover the mercy seat that is upon the testimony, that he die not. And he shall take of the blood of the bullock, and sprinkle it with his finger upon the mercy seat eastward, and before the mercy seat shall he sprinkle of the blood with his finger seven times." Well, I just read that passage to show here an example of the use of the censer. So we see then what a censer is. Each of these men were to have a censer, 250 men, plus Korah and the other two men with Korah. Now, let's look a little bit deeper, though, and talk about the incense. Every man take his censer and put incense in them. What was the incense? As we turn over to Exodus, the 30th chapter, I'd like to read a little bit there about this incense. We want to first of all go to Exodus 30, beginning with verse 34, as he describes about the incense. "And the Lord said unto Moses, Take unto thee sweet spices, stacte, and onycha, and galbanum. These sweet spices with pure frankincense, of each shall there be a like weight." Now he tells him what to use to put in this. And the scholars go into great detail to name what these things are. I won't go into try to repeat what is written about it. But one writer, Josephus, actually says that there were 13 ingredients in the incense. And this frankincense, the word frank there means free, which means that it's a substance that freely emitted its odor or its smell. And so they mix these things. He says in verse 35, "And thou shalt make it a perfume, a confection after the art of the apothecary, tempered together, pure and holy." Now this word apothecary means that you were able to compound mixtures. And it's a practice that's even passed on down today to what a pharmacist would do. And so they were to practice this art of apothecary. It's mentioned several times. And one of the uses of it was to make this incense by taking all of these things that he names and put an equal weight of them there to make a perfume out of it, a confection after the order of the apothecary, and tempered together, pure and holy. "And thou shalt beat some of it very small and put of it before the testimony in the tabernacle of the congregation where I will meet with thee, and it shall be unto you most holy." Now this was the incense. This is what they burned when they put it in the censer or when they put it on the altar of incense. "And as for the perfume which thou shalt make, ye shall not make to yourselves according to the composition thereof. It shall be unto thee holy for the Lord." They were not permitted to use this perfume for personal uses. They could not take it and use it for themselves, but they were just to be used wholly for the Lord. And he further says, verse 38, "Whosoever shall make like unto that to smell thereunto shall even be cut off from his people." Now it seems that one of the purposes of this incense was to tone down the smell of the burnt offerings about the tabernacle or the temple, and so that it gave a a more of a sanitary atmosphere about the tabernacle after they were dealing with the burnt offerings. But it also had another meaning, and even more of a symbolic meaning, and that is it was symbolic of the prayers going up and ascending to God. There was very definitely a symbolic and spiritual meaning attached to this smell and this vapor or smoke that would be put off by this incense. Nobody else was to use it except the priest. It was to be done in the tabernacle and in a special way. Well, let's stay in the same 30th chapter of Exodus and look at the, begin with the first verse and read a little bit about the altar of incense. Exodus 30, begin with the first verse. And thou shalt make an altar to burn incense upon. Of shittim wood shalt thou make it. A cubit shall be the length thereof, and a cubit the breadth thereof. Four square shall it be, and two cubits shall be the height thereof. The horns thereof shall be of the same. Now, it's going to be a cubit square, 18 inches wide, 18 inches long, and then two cubits high, which would be 36 inches high. And he talks about the horns thereof shall be of the same. Now, this horns is an interesting item. When we talk about the horns of this altar of incense, there was also horns on the regular altar, too. And these were thought to be the horns of some beasts. And they could have had two or three uses. One use would be for the sacrifice to be stabilized on the altar so that it wouldn't fall off. Another use would be to tie the sacrifice onto this horn, or these horns. And I suppose in the case of the altar of incense, it would maybe help keep the incense on the altar while it was in the process of being burned. But this little altar of incense now, it says 18 inches square and 36 inches high. And it goes on in verse 3, and thou shalt overlay it with pure gold, the top thereof, and the sides thereof round about, and the horns thereof, and thou shalt make unto it a crown of gold round about, and two golden rings shalt thou make to it under the crown of it, by the two corners thereof, upon the two sides of it shalt thou make it, and they shall be for places for the staves to bear it withal. And thou shalt make the staves of shittim wood, and overlay them with gold. So they had the gold around it, the gold crown, and the little hooks in the side of it where they could put the staves through to carry it. And then even the staves were made out of the same kind of wood and overlaid with gold. And thou shalt put it before the veil that is by the ark of the testimony, before the mercy seat that is over the testimony, where I will meet with thee. And the best I can understand from that is, it was to be put right outside of the veil that separated the holy place from the most holy place. And there, right outside the veil, is whenever the incense was burned there, then the incense would go through the veil and surround the ark and the cherubim and the mercy seat inside the most holy place. And Aaron shall burn thereon sweet incense every morning. When he dresseth the lamps, he shall burn the incense upon it. And when Aaron lighteth the lamps at even, he shall burn the incense upon it, a perpetual incense before the Lord throughout your generations. Ye shall offer no strange incense thereon, nor burnt sacrifice, nor meat offering, neither shall ye pour drink offering thereon. Now, this little altar was just to be used strictly for incense, strictly for the particular incense that they were to make up here by the formula given in the 30th chapter, and it was to be used for no other purpose than that. So begin to see now this thing of incense is not just any old thing that they could use, but it was a very special preparation. In Psalms 141, verse 2, we have a statement there that's enlightening about incense. Let my prayer be set forth before thee as incense, and the lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice. Here we have a reference of incense being regarded as the same thing as prayer. And in Revelations 8, verses 3 through 4, we have another allusion to that, and I'd just like to turn right fast and read that. Revelation 8, verses 3 through 4. And another angel came and stood at the altar, having a golden censer. Now, we know what a censer is. We talked about it. And there was given unto him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense, which came with the prayers of the saints, ascended up before God out of the angel's hand. And the angel took the censer and filled it with the fire of the altar and cast it to the earth, and there were voices and thunders and lightnings and earthquakes. Well, the point I want to get to there is that there are allusions in the Bible to this incense going up as prayers to God. And the New Testament makes reference to our approach to God as being that of a sweet-smelling savor. And it has a reference to this incense. Well, in the book of Luke, Luke 1, verses 9 through 11, we have there the story of Zechariah, the priest who was the father of John the Baptist, and his duty in the temple at the time he was involved in this was to light the incense in the morning and the evening. Every day in the holy place, the incense was lit, morning and evening, whenever the candles were also lit. So this incense was a very integral and daily part of this temple service, and he says a perpetual offering. So now, back to our story. In number 16, so every man, verse 17, every man take his censer and put incense in him and bring you before the Lord every man his censer, 250 censers, thou also an Aaron, and each of you his censer. And they took every man his censer and put fire in them and laid incense thereon and stood in the door of the tabernacle of the congregation with Moses and Aaron, and Korah gathered all the congregation against them under the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto all the congregation. Here they were gathered together now, and the glory of the Lord came unto the congregation. And he always appeared there at the tabernacle, that his glory did. And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. And God was just ready to show right now he was going to get rid of them. Well, you get away from them, I'm going to consume this congregation in a moment. We're going to completely eradicate this congregation. And they fell upon their faces and said, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and wilt thou be wroth with all the congregation? Now here is the third account that we have of Moses making intercession for the people when God was ready to destroy them. When he came down, you know, from Mount Sinai with the tables of stone and they'd made the golden calf, God was ready to destroy them. And Moses pleaded for the people. Again, when they went to Kadesh Barnea and God wanted them to go into the land and they refused to go, even though Caleb and Joshua said they could, Moses again pleaded with God that he not destroy the people because he was going to. Now here a third time, God's ready to destroy them. And Moses makes this plea to God. Said, shall one man sin, and then are you going to be wroth with all the congregation? And notice how he approaches God, what he calls him. He says, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh. It doesn't matter what flesh we're talking about. If that flesh has a spirit, this is the God of the spirits of all flesh. There's just one God. What a way to describe the fact that there's one God. He's the God of the spirits of all flesh. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the congregation, saying, get you up from about the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Moses rose up and went unto Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spake unto the congregation, saying, depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest ye be consumed in all their sins. So they got up from the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram on every side. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood in the door of their tents, and their wives, and their sons, and their little children. So you see, most of them left. But here, Dathan and Abiram and their wives and their family are still standing there, and Korah. And Moses said, hereby ye shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of mine own mind. Now, that was kind of the accusation given, is you set yourself up, Moses, and you don't have a right to do this. So Moses says, you're going to know now that the Lord sent me to do this, and I didn't do it of my own mind. If these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Lord hath not sent me. But if the Lord make a new thing, and the earth open her mouth, and swallow them up with all that appertain unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then you shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord. That was a clear enough statement. If it happens like Moses said, Lord does a new thing and swallows them up. They go down to the pit, then you know they provoke the Lord. If they're allowed to die like ordinary man die, then you know that the Lord didn't send me. And it came to pass, verse 31, as he had made an end of speaking all these words, that the ground clave asunder that was under them, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses, and all the men that appertained unto Korah, and all their goods. And they and all that appertained to them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them, and they perished from among the congregation. So here a terrible, great calamity, a new thing, as Moses said, did happen. The earth just opened up, swallowed them in, all the families of these men, and Korah, and he said that they perished from among the congregation. Now we read over in the book of Jude, where Jude is making a reference to Korah, whenever he's talking about the false teachers, and he says they perished in the gainsaying of Korah. Korah, or C-O-R-E, which is another name for Korah. Korah was a gainsayer, and Korah perished. And this verse here says, they perished from among the congregation. So we see then what did happen to Korah and to these two men that were with him, Dathan and Abiram, as a result of this. Now I'd like to mention one little aside here, and that is that although Korah died, God did not visit his sins upon his children. But we read later on in Numbers 26:11 that the sons of Korah did not perish. And from further study we find that the sons of Korah actually went on to write a part of the Psalms. I believe there are 11 Psalms that the sons of Korah are supposed to have written. That would be Psalms 42, Psalms 44 through 49, Psalms 84, Psalms 85, Psalms 87, and Psalm 88. And from a reading of those Psalms, I just gave a superficial reading of them, they seem to reflect a lasting lesson that God is supreme, God is to be respected and ever adored, and never is God to be taken lightly. So that's that to me is interesting. These Psalms have gone into the record now as a permanent method that the church today even is to use in praise to God, written by the sons of Korah. So they were not guilty of the same sin that Korah was guilty of. Verse 34, and all Israel that were round about them fled at the cry of them, for they said, lest the earth swallow us up also. And there came out a fire from the Lord and consumed the 250 men that offered incense. Now these men had the censers and the incense, then a fire came and consumed them. Now as you stop and look at this total thing, what comes to me is that these men were wanting to be the priesthood. They were wanting to be priests. They were wanting to do something that God had intended for them to do. So Moses had them to do what a priest would do. You put the incense in, hold your censer up, and you start serving the function of a priest, and see how God likes it. And so we see what happened. God consumed them with fire, all 250 of them who had the incense and the censers. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, that he take up the censers out of the burning, and scatter thou the fire yonder, for they are hallowed. Now, these censers that these 250 men had, they were still holy instruments. The men were misusing them. God was very displeased with it, and the men perished. But the censers were still holy instruments. So he told him to tell Eleazar, the son of Aaron, to go take these censers, get the fire out of them, and take the censers, for they're hallowed. The censers of these sinners against their own souls, let them make them broad plates for a covering of the altar. They were to take them and make a broad plates to cover the altar with. For they offer them before the Lord, therefore they are hallowed, and they shall be a sign unto the children of Israel. Now can you imagine, every time they saw this altar with this covering on it, the covering was made out of those censers that had been used by those 250 men in the rebellion. It was a sign unto the children of Israel. God just never left anything to question when it came to making something absolutely sure in their minds that this was something that they could remember and know that he had acted. And Eleazar the priest took the brazen censers wherewith they that were burnt had offered, and they were made broad plates for a covering of the altar. And this word brazen here means that they were made out of brass or copper. For a covering of the altar to be a memorial unto the children of Israel, that no stranger, which is not of the seed of Aaron, come near to offer incense before the Lord. Now this is what it was to remind them of, that no stranger who was not of the seed of Aaron could come near to offer incense unto the Lord. So you see, it was not only just the tribe of Levi, but it had to be somebody who was of the seed of Aaron. Only Aaron's family constituted the priesthood to be able to offer incense. Now let's not get in our minds that these people took this perfume and they just made themselves smell real good with perfume. It was only used in service to the Lord, only in the tabernacle or the temple, only by those that were the descendants of Aaron. That he be not as Korah and as his company, as the Lord said to him by the hand of Moses. Now, the great lesson here is that we're not to be presumptuous. We're not to take upon us something that's not ours to take. We're not to resent God's plan and God's order, the way God has set things in. No doubt a person could have had a much, much more comfortable life doing the job that was delegated for Korah to do as a Levite rather than doing the job that was delegated for Aaron to do as the priest and the chief priest. But now we're not through with this. These people just will not ever learn, it seems. Verse 41. But on the morrow, all the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, ye have killed the people of the Lord. Now here they were blaming all this on Moses and Aaron. Look what you've done, Moses and Aaron. You've killed the people of the Lord. You've killed God's people. And it came to pass, when the congregation was gathered against Moses and against Aaron, that they looked toward the tabernacle of the congregation, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. Here God appeared again at the tabernacle, this cloud, here's glory was. And Moses and Aaron came before the tabernacle of the congregation. Now it seems when God wanted to meet with them, he appeared there with his glory, and they went to it, and then God spoke to them. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, get you up from among this congregation, that I may consume them as in a moment. And they fell on their faces. Now here we go, the fourth time God's ready to consume this congregation. He tells Moses and Aaron, you get away from them, I'm going to consume them in a moment. Sure, they had to know that this earth opening up and swallowing up these people and those 250 consumed with fire. They had to know that was an act of God. It wasn't Moses and Aaron doing that. They believed what they wanted to believe. So God is ready to consume them. Now, what would you have done if you were Moses and Aaron? How would you have combated this thing? He'd already appealed to God three times in three emotional reprieves, or what amounted to a reprieve, pleas to God, asking God to forgive the people again. Now, would he go a fourth time? Could he go a fourth time? Would there be any use of it? I mean, what would he say this time? So, let's notice what happened. And Moses said unto Aaron, take a censer and put fire therein from off the altar and put on incense. Now, we've already studied about what all that is. And go quickly unto the congregation and make an atonement for them, for there is wrath gone out from the Lord. The plague is begun. Some kind of a plague now the Lord had sent upon this people. The plague had already begun. It probably started at one side of the camp and was going to move through to the other side. They saw that the wrath had gone out from the Lord. He was going to carry out his threat. And so here Moses was thinking quickly, and so he told Aaron to do something that would be an atonement. Take a censer, put coals in it off the altar, put incense on it from the Lord, and make an atonement for them. Now, let's bear in mind the fact that this incense has a very definite spiritual significance. It wasn't just to kill the odor in the temple. It's symbolic of the prayers of the people going up to God. In Revelation, it was mingled with the prayers of the saints. The angel, he burned it on the golden censer, and it went up with the prayers of the saints to God. And so we then, as we worship God today, we become a sweet-smelling savor to God, as the New Testament describes us. Our prayers, then, are the incense. And so here we have an atonement, which is probably one of the few symbols in the Old Testament that is really a counterpart and a reference to the actual sacrifice and atonement that Christ made for us. You know, we had the account of the brazen serpent, where God allowed them to be spared if they'd look upon this brazen serpent. And now we have this censer as Aaron makes the atonement. And Aaron took as Moses commanded, and ran into the midst of the congregation, and behold, the plague was begun among the people. They already started dying from this. And as he put on incense and made an atonement for the people, and he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stayed. Aaron stood between the dead and the living. That probably means that as this plague was making its way across the camp, those that had encountered it died, and so he went right to the place where it was moving, and he found himself standing between the dead and the living, and he made the atonement, and the plague was stayed. Now, they that died in the plague were 14,700, besides them that died about the matter of Korah. See, this was an altogether different matter now. This had nothing to do with Korah. This was a matter of the people not believing that God had done this and trying to accuse Moses and Aaron of doing it. And Aaron returned unto Moses under the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the plague was stayed. Now, what a sight it would have been had we been there and witnessed this, had we been a participant in it even. What a sight to have seen what happened. What quick thinking on the part of Moses. The only thing that he could think of that would do this was an atonement for the people. And so they did it. He'd appealed to God so many times that it was no use to do that anymore. And this thing did work, as Aaron stood between the living and the dead. Well, the next thing that happens here is God has each of the tribes to bring forth a rod. And there'd be 12 rods, and then Aaron had a rod and with his name on it. They put these rods in the tabernacle and left them overnight, and Aaron's rod budded. And not only did his rod bud, but it also produced blossoms, and it also produced fruits, almonds. So it had these three things, the bud and the blossom and the almond, or the fruit, showing very definitely that it was a miracle. The other rods did not do this, and so this was symbolic now, once and for all, a sign that God had definitely chosen Aaron and his successors to be the priests, and it was never to be challenged again. And Aaron's rod that budded then was kept as a